In the news today, the 2026 Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction successfully raised a total of $405,036 to support junior livestock exhibitors at the Wisconsin State Fair. This significant investment in the next generation of agricultural leaders was further bolstered by the Blue Ribbon sale of Champions Foundation, which awarded $57,000 in scholarships and an additional $30,000 toward various junior exhibitor awards and recognition programs. Highlighting a new chapter of support, the foundation also launched the Youth Impact Grant Program this year, providing $22,500 in financial assistance to empower youth across beef, swine, sheep, and goat projects. Together, these initiatives underscore a powerful commitment to the educational and professional development of Wisconsin's young agricultural enthusiasts. Congratulations to area young people, Brindlin Knabel of Richland Center, who received a $3,000 Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction Scholarship. Sydney Cherney of Waniwak, who exhibited the Champion Hampshire Barrow, and Maggie Kirshner of Lone Rock, exhibitor of the Champion Shorthorn Steer. Christopher B. Brugger Jr. was sentenced to 18 years in prison, followed by 15 years of extended supervision today in Dane County Circuit Court, following a jury conviction on multiple felony charges. The legal proceedings highlight a series of offenses related to a high-speed incident that occurred in October 2025. During the April 2026 trial, the jury found Brugger guilty on numerous counts, including multiple instances of operator fleeing or eluding an officer that resulted in great bodily harm, hit and run involving great bodily harm, and reckless driving causing great bodily harm. The charges stem from an incident where Brugger crashed into the squad car of police officer Ryan Kimberly, causing significant injuries and also injuring Kimberly's canine partner. Judge Diane Schlipper presided over the case, with Melville Peter Middleton II serving as the defendant's current legal counsel. The defendant, who has remained in custody throughout the proceedings, awaits his final sentencing hearing, which concludes a complex legal timeline that included several changes in representation and multiple pretrial motions. The Wisconsin State Building Commission, led by Governor Tony Evers, has recently approved an extensive suite of building projects totaling approximately $374 million. These investments, authorized during a meeting at State Fair Park, span state-owned facilities and properties across the entire state. Governor Evers emphasized that these approvals represent a continuation of an eight-year effort to support generational development, ensuring that state institutions, parks, and University of Wisconsin campuses are resilient and better equipped to serve students, state employees, and visitors for decades to come. A major highlight of the approved measures is the strategic sale of the Jeff 2 and Jeff 3 facilities in Madison. This move aligns with the administration's Vision 2030 plan to consolidate office space and reduce taxpayer costs, ultimately shedding over 135,000 square feet and avoiding an estimated $213 million in necessary modern repairs. Infrastructure reliability also took over center stage with the approval of Phase 2 utility improvements at the Mendota Mental Health Institute and a multi-building telecommunications cable replacement project at UW Parkside. Additionally, the commission prioritized safety through a fire sprinkler system retrofit at UW La Crosse and the reconstruction of the century-old Pattison State Park Dam, which recently suffered a breach due to heavy rainfall. The approved funding also addresses critical service and educational needs. In Crandon, a 1930s-era fire response ranger station will be replaced to enhance emergency services across five counties. For veterans, the commission authorized a significant upgrade to the food service and laundry facilities at the Wisconsin Veterans Home at King. Higher education will see notable advancements with the construction of a modernized UW-Madison veterinary diagnostic lab in Barron County, the renovation of Lapham Hall at UW-Milwaukee into an active learning classroom, and new athletic and cadaver laboratories at UW-Green Bay. Collectively, these initiatives, along with 37 separate maintenance projects across 16 counties, represent a comprehensive commitment to protecting and improving Wisconsin's public assets. The Wisconsin Department of Justice, alongside a multi-state coalition, has achieved a landmark legal triumph against the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. This victory effectively blocks an unlawful attempt by the federal government to cap funding for permanent housing projects, a move that would have placed some of the state's most vulnerable residents at risk of homelessness. By successfully challenging these policy changes in court, the coalition has ensured that up to 1,300 individuals in Wisconsin can remain in their homes, preserving a vital safety net for those experiencing housing insecurity. For decades, HUD has prioritized the Housing First model, focusing on rapid placement into permanent residences without imposing restrictive prerequisites like sobriety or minimum income levels. However, recent administrative shifts sought to undermine this commitment by redirecting billions of dollars toward transitional housing and other programs. Attorney General Call emphasized the importance of this win, noting that it marks the second time legal action has stopped federal efforts from destabilizing programs designed to address the root causes of homelessness in local communities. The legal battle spanned several months and multiple federal court rulings. Following a separate victory in Rhode Island earlier this year, HUD attempted to circumvent previous rulings by creating a $1.3 billion set-aside for new projects. This tactical shift threatened the housing stability of approximately 97,000 residents across the nation. Last week, the U.S. District Court for the District of Rhode Island ruled that these funding restrictions were unlawful and could not be implemented, solidifying a major defense for permanent supportive housing programs nationwide. Political advertising is surging toward a record-breaking 2026, with PQ Media forecasting total media spending to hit $15.3 billion. This figure represents a 46.3% increase compared to the 2022 midterm elections, and slightly edges out the spending seen during the 2024 presidential cycle. According to reports cited by Inside Radio, analysts expect more than 60% of this budget, totaling $9.38 billion, to enter media markets following Labor Day. The rise in spending is driven by an intense political landscape marked by record fundraising, highly competitive primaries, and numerous open seat contests. PQ Media notes that federal races will capture the bulk of this investment, with Senate and House campaigns combined projected to account for over 62% of total media buying. Specifically, Senate races are slated for $5.38 billion, while House races are expected to generate $4.16 billion. Gubernatorial contests are also set to see significant activity, with $3.2 billion in anticipated spending, providing broadcasters with opportunities to reach voters across entire states. The Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions, DFI, has joined state financial agencies from 47 states and the District of Columbia in announcing a $15.5 million settlement with NewRez LLC, one of the nation's largest mortgage servicers. The agreement resolves allegations that the company improperly imposed force-placed insurance costs on thousands of borrowers who already maintained active homeowners insurance policies. A multi-state examination revealed that NewRez wrongly applied these insurance charges to more than 4,200 borrowers, resulting in consumer harm exceeding $4.5 million. Force-placed insurance is typically a high-cost alternative intended only for situations where a homeowner's coverage has lapsed. However, regulators found that NewRez failed to recognize existing active policies, leading to unnecessary and excessive financial burdens for affected homeowners. Under the settlement terms, the Fort Washington, Pennsylvania-based company has already remediated over $4.5 million to impacted borrowers. In addition to these refunds, NewRez will pay approximately $11 million in penalties and costs. Beyond the financial penalties, the servicer is required to implement rigorous new controls and conduct enhanced monitoring for any loans subject to force-placed insurance to prevent future compliance failures. DFI Division of Banking Administrator Kim Swisdorf emphasized that the settlement highlights the effectiveness of networked supervision among state regulators. By sharing resources and conducting comprehensive examinations, state agencies were able to prioritize consumer protection and ensure that mortgage servicers are held accountable for their internal oversight. NewRez cooperated with the enforcement team, which was led by the District of Columbia with assistance from several other states. Wisconsin residents with questions regarding the enforcement action or those seeking to verify a company's license are encouraged to contact the DFI's mortgage banking section. The DFI remains committed to ensuring that consumers are not held responsible for unwanted and redundant insurance costs imposed by financial institutions. Sauk County Public Health has announced a partnership with O'Connell Pharmacy to host a dedicated back-to-school vaccine clinic Thursday, August 20th. The event will take place at the West Square Building in Baraboo, located at 505 Broadway Street, room B24, from 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. To make the experience more enjoyable for younger attendees, children who receive their vaccinations will be eligible to choose from a variety of prizes, which include coupons for Culver's and day passes to the Baraboo Children's Museum. The clinic is designed to be inclusive, offering services to several different groups. Children and adolescents age 18 and under can receive vaccines regardless of their insurance status, though most insurance plans are accepted. Insured adults age 19 and older are also welcome to attend, with a wide range of providers covered. Additionally, a limited supply of vaccines will be available for adults without insurance, provided they are residents of Sauk County. Rebecca Sidlowski, a public health nurse for Public Health Sauk County, emphasized the importance of the initiative, noting that it can often be challenging for families to secure appointments with primary care providers during the busy back-to-school season. She stated that ensuring children are up to date on their immunizations is a vital step in helping them begin the academic year healthy and fully prepared for their various school activities. While registration for the clinic is not mandatory, interested individuals can sign up in advance. For those with specific questions regarding the event, O'Connell Pharmacy can be reached by phone at 608-837-5949. The universities of Wisconsin have announced a comprehensive set of budget proposals for the 2027 through 2029 cycle aimed at bolstering the state's economic future through targeted investments in workforce development and entrepreneurship. Led by Regent President Kyle Weatherly and Interim President Renee Wachter, university leaders introduced the Tech for Tomorrow and Accelerate Wisconsin initiatives. These programs are designed to meet Wisconsin's evolving labor needs by aiming to produce 300,000 career-ready workers and upskilling 1 million existing employees for higher-quality jobs over the next decade. Interim President Wachter emphasized that these proposals leverage the university system's longstanding role in solving state challenges. By focusing on education and people, the budget seeks to bridge current workforce gaps while providing the necessary capital and support to foster 2,500 new businesses. The Tech for Tomorrow initiative specifically focuses on accelerating the transition of laboratory research into commercialized products, while Accelerate Wisconsin is geared toward providing entrepreneurs with the resources needed to expand markets and develop innovative products. In addition to these core initiatives, the UWs are proposing UW4U to enhance continuing and online education alongside You Succeed, which focuses on vital student support services like career advising. Leaders from UW-Milwaukee, UW-Stout, and UW-Parkside have rallied behind these workforce-oriented goals, highlighting the critical role the university system plays in sparking innovation. The full budget proposal, which seeks to transform the state's entrepreneurial landscape and talent pipeline, is scheduled for a vote by the UW Board of Regents next week. AI-powered scams are surging in Wisconsin and costing victims far more money. The Better Business Bureau reports that from January through July, reports of AI-related scams jumped 238% compared to the same period last year. The average loss climbed from about $778 to more than $5,500. The BBB says scammers are using AI tools like voice cloning, deep fake videos, and fake investment platforms to appear legitimate. Officials urge consumers to verify claims independently and avoid sharing personal or financial information with unexpected contacts.
Double Cola and Richland Center's connection. And now for a Richland County Historical Society History Moment. Here's the rest of the story. According to a February 19th, 2026 post titled TBT, which is a Throwback Thursday article, a column done by Keith Ritten dated 3/7/2019. The roots of soda pop industry in Richland Center began in the early 1900s when Cy Fry had the first so-called pop factory. It was located in the back of his little store just east of the railroad tracks on Mill and Union Streets. William Robbins purchased the Fry factory in 1915, and then a year later in 1916, he bought the property directly south of the Park Hotel, in which he moved the bottling works. Robbins operated the Richland Bottling Works until July of 1936, when he sold it to E. F. Moore, president of Nedling Corporation. In 1937, Paul E. Nedland became the president of the firm and continued the operations until selling it to Byron Clarkson in 1954. In 1929, Byron Clarkson and his wife Letha established and operated Clarkson's Dairy Products in Richland Center. It was eventually sold to Gold Bond Ice Cream Company in 1953. In 1954, in search of a new challenge, Byron made the decision to buy Netland's Double Cola bottling plant, which was still located next to the Park Hotel on Central Avenue. It was around the corner from what was Clarkson's ice cream plant, which is now referred to as Gold Bond. Clarkson's first order of business was to move the plant from Central Avenue into a new structure which he built at the end of East Kinder Street, across from his east side home that was located on Paradise Hill Farm, just east of the town of Richland Center. In this new modern building, Clarkson installed an assembly line, new bottles, and added Double Cola as his line. Clarkson also added Ski, Dad's Root Beer, Werner's Ginger Ale, and an entire line of his own flavored of bottled pop called Hillbilly Beverages. These changes came along with new distribution routes, helped by Clarkson to transform a business that had previously been a seasonal business operating during the warm summer months. It was now a full-time, year-round industry and enabled Clarkson to grow the company from an annual gross of $12,000 in 1954 to an annual gross of $250,000 by 1961. The Clarksons operated their Double Cola business in the same manner by which they had operated their ice cream business, with Byron concerning himself with the operation of the plant and Letha handling the bookkeeping and office work. The Clarksons had two children, a son, Lee Henry, known as Hank Clarkson, and a daughter, Mrs. Becky Ann Howard. Hank Clarkson was an active partner with his parents and assumed ownership of the business upon their parents' retirement. The Clarksons grew their business from a localized distribution system into a territory that extended west of the Mississippi, south of Grant County and Lafayette County, into Iowa County, and as far north as Wisconsin Dells, including much of the lower Wisconsin River Valley. Distribution was handled by a fleet of four full-time trucks with a combined capacity of 880 cases that would operate 5 days a week. A major segment of their operation, which contributed to making it a year-round business, involved the sales and service of pop vending machines and pre-mixed dispensers, which were located throughout the area's schools and public buildings, even in restaurants and filling stations around the area. The Clarksons strove to keep up the latest developments and innovations in their industry and were quick to install new lines, bottle washers, as well as adding new products such as non-returnable bottles and cans. Hank Clarkson continued the operation of Double Cola plant until 1986. Listen next week for the history of Richland County, covering the Stump Dodger and the Tunnel at Tunnelville.
Today's History Moment is a service of the Richland County Historical Society. Members of the Historical Society enjoy reminiscing with the Achy Breaky newsletter. A strong membership base keeps the Historical Society viable and active by promoting the study and appreciation of local history, the sponsorship of programs devoted to local history, and the maintenance and access to the Achy School Museum. Annual memberships are just $10 for an individual or family, $20 for a business, or $100 for a lifetime individual or family membership. Memberships can be mailed to Richland County Historical Society, 213 South Central Avenue, Apartment Number 1, Richland Center, Wisconsin, 53581. You can also learn more at richlandcountyhistoricalsociety.weebly.com.
Thank you, as always, Ken Thied. I definitely remember the Hillbilly Pop Ski Dads and Double Cola we used to pick up from the mobile station in Richland Center. The Wisconsin Judicial Commission has filed a formal complaint against Winnebago County Circuit Court Judge Scott C. Wolt, alleging multiple instances of willful judicial misconduct. Following a comprehensive investigation, the commission found probable cause that Judge Wolt violated several Supreme Court rules governing judicial conduct, including failing to observe high standards of integrity and demeaning the judicial office. These findings stem from a series of incidents involving inappropriate public comments, retaliatory behavior toward local attorneys, and the unprofessional treatment of an expert witness during court proceedings. The core allegations detailed in the complaint include a 2023 media interview where Judge Wolt compared his judicial work to dealing with, quote, society's garbage, and subsequent post-election confrontations with attorneys who did not support his re-election campaign. In one instance, the judge reportedly told an attorney they were, quote, dead to me, and suggested a financial payment could resolve the personal cost of the election. Additionally, the commission highlights a June 2023 hearing where Judge Wolt allegedly spoke disparagingly to an experienced psychiatrist, questioning her English proficiency and telling her to get off her butt when rising for the court, which the commission argues demonstrated a lack of patience, dignity, and courtesy. In light of these alleged violations of the Code of Judicial Conduct, the commission is now seeking the appointment of a three-judge panel by the chief judge of the Court of Appeals. This panel will be tasked with making formal findings of fact and conclusions of law, eventually providing a recommendation for discipline to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Judge Wolt is required to file a response to these allegations within 45 days as the legal process moves toward a resolution regarding his standing within the Wisconsin judiciary. As the Wisconsin deer hunting season approaches, the Department of Natural Resources is issuing a critical warning regarding the use of ash trees for tree stands. The widespread infestation of the emerald ash borer has left ash trees across all 72 counties in a state of decay. In the southern two-thirds of the state, most ash trees are already dead or dying, while northern populations are seeing a rapid expansion of the pest. Because these trees are structurally compromised, they pose a significant danger to hunters. Infested ash trees are prone to unexpectedly dropping large branches or even snapping at the trunk, especially during windy conditions. Bill McNee, a DNR forest health specialist, emphasizes that since it is often difficult to visually confirm an infestation, hunters should simply avoid ash trees entirely when selecting a location for their stands. Safety in the field extends beyond tree selection, as approximately 1 in 4 bow hunters has experienced a fall or near fall from an elevated position. To mitigate these risks, hunters must adhere to fundamental safety protocols. The most vital rule is to always wear a full-body harness or fall arrest system and ensure it is connected to a shorter tether line. This system is designed to keep a hunter safely in their seat rather than catching them mid-fall. Additionally, maintaining 3 points of contact, such as 2 hands and 1 foot, while climbing is essential for stability. Hunters should also utilize a haul line to safely raise and lower unloaded equipment, including firearms and bows, and remain connected to a lifeline from the moment they leave the ground until they return. Beyond personal safety, hunters play a pivotal role in protecting the broader ecosystem by preventing the spread of forest pests and diseases. When traveling to hunting grounds, it is imperative to obtain firewood near the destination rather than transporting it from home. This practice reduces the likelihood of spreading invasive species like the emerald ash borer, spongy moth, or oak wilt. Opting for dry firewood with loose bark or purchasing certified treated wood are the most responsible choices. By combining vigilant tree selection, rigorous stand safety, and careful firewood sourcing, Wisconsin hunters can ensure a safer season for themselves and the forests they enjoy.